Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson with the New Cyber Frontier, coming to you from the SecureSet studio here in Colorado Springs, where we do cybersecurity education and training. I have the privilege here on New Cyber Frontier to have as my guest today Mr. Heath Renfro. He is the CISO of Leo Cybersecurity, and more importantly, he's a fellow Navy brother. Welcome to the show, Heath.
Hey, thank you for letting me come on the show and be part of this opportunity.
Well, this is great stuff. Heath, we talked a little bit before the show about your Navy background. Share a little bit with our listening audience about kind of where you came from and how you ended up here, and particularly in cybersecurity.
Well, hey, it's an interesting story, as I was telling you. Though I was an operations specialist, I ended up going to a 3-star flag staff as soon as I got into the Navy and got put into some different roles than what my rate was actually supposed to be. And I actually started working in the IT side of things pretty heavily. And during that time frame, I was real big into tactical communications and deployed in various regions of the world, including both war zones where we did go into combat. Set up HF communications, ATCOM communications, and doing IT work, and soon, started doing some hacking, to be completely honest with you, to be able to get some of our equipment to work the right way as it was coming through the acquisition. Sometimes things were being taken away from us, such as close air support for the A-130 gunships and A-10 warthogs. So I got real interested in that field, and about the 9-year mark, I took my tactical communications background and landed a job outside of the Navy right there in the Hampton Roads area of Virginia, which was always real good to me. And I just went from there. I went from being a southern Texas country boy, living in the woods pretty much, to started doing IT work overnight and just became fascinated with that world and started deep diving into information security. I just found a passion for it and went to various different locations within DOD. My last position before coming to Leo was I was the CISO for Army Medicine, which is one of the larger healthcare providers in the world. So
yeah, wow.
I've gone from small. Go ahead.
That's fantastic. Of course, the Army would need a Navy guy to get its stuff together, naturally.
Well, we were on a good win streak in the Army-Navy game, too, but now I think we're down 3 years in a row now, so it's time to get back on that path.
Yeah, I'm tired of charity, So, and I appreciate sort of that experience, too. I served on a number of fleet staff, and it's not uncommon, as you said, for people to pull you into another realm, and, even though it was a mismatch from what you thought you'd be doing, it ended up being a great thing, and clearly it has been. Keith, tell me a little bit about Leo Cybersecurity and what services you guys provide.
Yeah, so we're a unique shop. We're a startup, and I'm actually one of the CISOs for Leo Cybersecurity. The whole theme around Leo Cybersecurity is we're looking at the shortest of the workforce in the United States and across the globe, actually. And instead of going after tech and pushing tech, which we actually do because some of the issues that we're facing in the community is too much tech is being pushed, and there's not enough resources to be able to manage even the technology that is coming in. And there's a lot of deployments that are failing when you do pick technology. And we also want to change the mindset that cybersecurity is an IT issue. I know it's an overall business, responsibility, and it's a risk management thing, and that's what we bring to the table. So our company's gone out and got folks that have been doing this for a very long time, 15-plus year practitioners, and we're going into mid-market areas, especially the credit union space, and we're offering our services to be able to sit there and build a robust cybersecurity program that's starts really driving home the message to the executive level and getting them to own the responsibility of cybersecurity and managing it. And it's the message that just continuously, you know, it never stops. You know, it's a continuous thing. You know, one minute you might be in maturity level 4, but the next you can be back down to a 1. You just never know in this world that we live in nowadays. So it's fun, especially from the world I've come from big DOD and managing very large programs and seeing the needle move just a little bit, now to be in a virtual CISO from all these credit unions, and we have network engineers and analysts and threat analysts on the other side of our company too that are there to provide these mid-market companies that just couldn't afford the talent, to be completely honest with you. And they get all that at a fraction of the time, but the truth is they don't really need somebody full-time, but they definitely need expertise. So you can see the needle move. It's unique. It's different. Most people, the customers we go talk to, they still look at us a little funny. Well, you're going to give us all this talent for, you know, a fraction of the cost of what we have to pay for ourselves. And we're like, yes, that's what we want to do. So far, so good.
And you provide that essential service. Let's take a quick break and go listen to our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hello, this is Abe Thompson again with New Cyber Frontier Podcast, coming to you from Secure Set here in Colorado Springs. Today's guest is a CISO from Leo Cybersecurity, Mr. Heath Renfro. So you had quite a journey. It's kind of a neat, there's a bit of altruism, I think, to our industry, and you guys represent that well, in that you can provide an essential service to some of these organizations at a fraction of what they'd have to do to you know, develop, grow, build, and pay their own CISOs. So talk to me just real quickly, if you would, about what type of training and pipeline led you to success as a CISO? Because I know there's probably a lot of folks out there in their career that are looking at a step like this. What did it take for you to make the jump?
Oh, to make a jump to the CISO role? Or
yes.
Or just to jump to the cybersecurity?
To the CISO role.
Well, you've got to have a lot of patience and be pretty political. So, when I look at the training, what I look at from people is they're going to have to understand that, first off, they're going to probably have to step away from being real technical and hands-on. And that is the first thing I look for and I ask individuals is, if you really want to become a CISO, yes, you have to stay up to date on technology and have an understanding, but you just will not have the time to deep dive into the real deep dive, hands-on, I'm going to operate the keyboard. I've been 15 years now away from the keyboard and been a senior manager since then. So I am not the smartest technical person in the world anymore, and I accept that, but that's why I hire people that are, and you got to leverage your team. Another way I talk to people when they want to become a CISO is, how are you going to talk to the business leaders and how do you communicate with them and the executive team to make them understand the cybersecurity risk that are facing the organization? And the biggest training I can tell people to go out there and look at is, you know, there's some great books out there from the FAIR model and some quantitative risk analysis and cybersecurity risk analysis books out there that just start looking at Monte Carlo algorithms to be able to run and present money, dollar signs, based off the cyber risk that organization is facing. So that's the big training that I think is they got to be able to step away. They got to be able to speak in business terms with senior management. Or as a CISO, I think that you're going to tell. You got to be able to talk on both sides of the houses. You can have the greatest mission and intentions in the world, but unless you have your business leaders buying into it, it does not succeed for the most part.
Well, indeed, and you've hit the nail on the head in terms of the process to get there and the essential nature of having that guy. And it, like I said, it's you know, we get to a certain position. I'm kind of in your shoes where we are no longer the typical hands on the keyboard guy. We move farther and farther away from some of the quote unquote fun stuff. But at the same time, as we know, it is essential, to have leadership in the chair that can speak the language. And you know, we don't get to be as technical there, but we now get to provide mentorship and advisory support and leadership to the community. And speaking of mentorship, I see you've done quite a bit of that in your past with Cyber Patriot and others. What does that opportunity mean to you professionally and personally?
Okay, so the selfish professional side of me is that I'm trying to get my replacement to come down the road to be able to replace me and do a better job than I've been doing in the past. So on a personal standpoint, it is one of the most rewarding ways that I can do to be part of the Cyber Patriot program and to coach individuals that are in all the way down the elementary school in our local area that the program has been able to reach. And I'm starting to see more and more young ladies get into the Cyber Patriot program, which is very encouraging. And I've said I'm a huge advocate for women in the cybersecurity, and I think that the women bring a different perspective of looking at things, and that's what makes our partnerships and our marriage is so great. Is you're a tandem, male and a female going back and forth with each other, and just the different views are always great to have. And we need that in this field. We already have a shortage of manpower across the board, and to be able to change and gain a whole bunch of momentum to get women in cybersecurity currently that are probably over the age of 25 is going to be challenging. But if we can reach the young ladies when they're in elementary school and get them interested in it, just talking to my daughter last night, and she's not interested like that, even though I'm in cybersecurity, but I kind of bribed her last night that I'll buy an iPhone 10 if you join the STEM program in ninth grade next year.
Well, thank you, because I'm writing that down, because my 12-year-old still is not interested at all in what daddy does. If I can find the mix, the other thing too is a lot of the STEM centered folks she thinks it's just the guys over there, but it's not even remotely the case. I mean, especially Colorado Springs here, we are very blessed with so many forward leaning, female CEOs and leaders in the cyber industry. So honestly, because of where I've been around great cybersecurity leadership on the female side. And I'm surprised that I don't see more now that I've kind of come out into to the corporate world and the private industry. But I appreciate your fight there. And yes, I may not do an iPhone. I'll probably do like a Note 9 or something. But any way I can bribe my daughter to be interested in what daddy's up to. Awesome. So, now you're in this opportunity, you're in this position as a CISO, you're kind of looking across the horizon anyway. What should we be most concerned about right now in cybersecurity?
Well, it depends on what market and what side of the house you're in. I thought that, in DOD, that I had seen everything. Then I came to the private sector, and I can see that the private sector is actually more at risk than even the Department of Defense, because it's not just cyber criminals facing them. I think that the advanced persistent threat is out there for the private sector, too. If you look at Russia, I consider Russia APT, even though the cyber criminal element is, the main factor in most crimes nowadays across the globe, but they're targeting individual locations, and I think today they announced, I don't know whether or not it's official or the analysis has been done, but saw a New York Times article saying that China is responsible for the Marriott hack.
Yep, I saw a Senate hearing on it this morning.
So what I think that we're going to face in 2019 a lot more attacks on your mobile devices. I think there's going to be a lot more targeted attacks going after your banking apps and different financial apps. We have a current malware out there that's sucking PayPal accounts dry right now. So I think your mobile phones are going to be the next big wave and next target for cyber criminals. And they've already been doing it with spoofing, and taking people's phone numbers to be able to catch the SMS, text messages, banking, and then going back and logging and money. So I've seen a lot of that, but I definitely think mobile devices, and I continue to think that, because of logistical issues with, you know, two of our main rivals in cyberspace that will continue to see an uptick in nation attacks on private sector and probably our concerns. But like I said, not involved on that side no more, so don't have the good intel.
Well, and you know, we know our adversaries are no dummies, and they recognize this capability as a force multiplier for sure. So I'd like to get back to that specific warning you have and concern you have for mobile devices. But first, let's just take a quick break and go hear from our sponsor.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
This is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier podcast here from the SecureSet campus here in Colorado Springs. We have as our special guest today, Mr. Heath Renfro. Heath, we were just talking about your views on the next big thing, and you're looking at just with the meteoric and exponential growth of mobile device use, that's really the nearest horizon and the greatest cause for concern. What do we do about it?
It's the same old situation that we are all facing on the security side, is we've got to get individuals to buy in, education, to be able to put two-factor authentication and start utilizing that across the board for every login attempt they make, including their cell phones, and to put the right antivirus and scanning equipment on their phone so when they do download an app or download that latest new cool game they saw in Play Store, you know, it's being scanned and actually be able to reduce the risk of it. You just don't see that happening, and unfortunately, you can give the education material out there to your consumers, and 90% of them probably are not going to sit there and take it. And frankly, it's, well, I'll always have a job because of it, but mm-hmm. I wish I could work myself out of a job.
Sure. Well, and honestly, we want our kids safe and all those other things, so somehow, you know, parents have to be somewhat versed so they can implement these things. Now, in your role as a CISO, what is the threat of mobile devices that you're most concerned about addressing, especially with your various clients?
Well, with my current clientele, the biggest threat that I'm concerned about is the proper testing on third-party applications. From a pen test and a continuous software development cycle, we actually encourage our clients to do third-party pen tests on their web mobile devices, and we've actually done some ourselves and have found some very critical issues with some major web app, mobile device web app, banking web app providers that, you know, within 20-minute scripts, is able to pop every user's account information across globe that used an app. Those types of situations are very much out there. Security is still not being embedded, and there's still this trust factor. So third-party vendor management on your web mobile devices and your website is extremely important. And the reason I think criminals are going to continue to target mobile devices heavily going forward, because I think that's the new attack vector.
Sure. And definitely it's not just specifically, you know, fiscal concerns. You come from having done cybersecurity in the medical industry, and it's easy for me, kind of having worked outside of that for the most part, to assume that it's because of HIPAA data, et cetera, et cetera. But what does the framework of concern look like inside the health industry? I know you've done some speaking at summits and conferences on the topic.
The healthcare spread is tremendous, and most people probably don't even realize how tremendous it is. You can build your castle around your healthcare data and your infrastructure inside of a hospital or a health clinic area, and think you're properly protected, but you forget the majority of those medical devices, just because they're FDA certification, have to be able to be monitored and maintained by the vendor themselves, which usually allows them to have access into your environment down to that medical device. So the attack vectors just across the board are tremendous in the healthcare industry. And it's just not viewed as something, security is not viewed as a business need. Most of our hospitals are kind of running low most of the time when it comes to their funding side of the house, and the IT department and cybersecurity take a back drop on things. And I believe security is put in the wrong place in a lot of hospitals. And until that changes, and what I mean by that is there's stuff underneath IT. And that's like having your defensive coordinator answering to your offensive coordinator, who answers to the head coach and goes, okay, this is the plays we're going to run. We're not playing any defense.
Yeah, of course.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying, I was agreeing that would be a tragic scenario.
Yeah, and you see that in the healthcare industry across the board. Even some recent announcements that I've seen come up, some pretty big organizations announcing their job description to put a CISO, first CISO in place within an organization. It's underneath the CIO. Huh. And I always reach out to those job posters and go, you're just not going to attract a seasoned CISO, not nowadays, because frankly, we have a lot more control and power because there's such a shortage of us. And we're not going to go work in an environment where we don't think that we can make headway. Now, can you make headway underneath the CIO's office? Absolutely. But can it be difficult? It can be. But it just kind of changed the mindset. And that's a CISO's job. We have to be able to speak on business terms with these executives. Until we can, you can see it in a room. I've seen it many times. I've done it. I've made these mistakes many, 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 many times. I've stumbled and seen the glaze over the eyes within 2 minutes of me talking and going, okay, I missed my mark. I missed my opportunity.
Oh, indeed. Now, speaking of sort of the healthcare industry, with WannaCry and the national health system in the United Kingdom, was what you've just described a contributor as well, or was it truly just that the ransomware was that strong?
Oh, I don't believe ransomware was strong. I think it's an exploit. Well, of course, tied back to the NSA there. Sorry for nobody's in the NSA.
Never heard of it.
I mean, I just read a report on NHS 2 days ago Freedom of Acts of requests to be able to get information out of there. They're still woefully undermanned when it comes to cybersecurity. The training is, disparate all across the board. There's some places that do have cybersecurity professionals and others that don't. I think their biggest issue comes down to funding. The healthcare system in the UK has been crumbling over the last 9 years. The funding has tremendously dropped. And you have an older health people, you have older people now that are coming through the health system right now, so they have older generation over there in the UK. That's where the primary dollars are being spent at.
Yeah.
So it's a priority, and that's fine. If risk was being managed and you were being able to put that risk in front of senior management, and go, okay, well, I'm willing to accept that risk right now because we have these other priorities, then that's perfectly fine. And I think that would be explainable to the press and to the media that, yeah, we understood the risk was there, but at the time, we didn't have the dollars to be able to, we did everything we could to mitigate the risk. That was a simple patching situation. Everybody says patching simple, but it's not. You know how complicated patching can be and how difficult it can be in the healthcare environment is very, very difficult for people to understand. You got to be very, very careful when you execute it and how you execute it and when you execute it. That way you don't interrupt the services that are being provided to the patients.
Right, and you don't want to be the one explaining to the hospital director that you lost a patient because we had to take time to implement a cybersecurity patch.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very, very challenging.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And so the incentive really in that environment probably is to take shortcuts sometimes, and it's hard to defeat that. Not to mention, not being a huge fan of the socialist medical system there. I can't imagine they would have had ample or sufficient funding to get that done. And you do have to do some investment up front. And you've kind of hit on that. The role of a CISO is to be able to speak to the executive level, sometimes to an ill-informed executive or C-suite, and also to help them understand they need to make an investment in an area where they're actually losing profit potentially.
It's it is one of the most challenging job, I think, for any senior security person, be it the CSO world or CISO world. The way I have been very successful to be able to do that is I go after each executive or each branch lead, you know, HR, legal, you know, across the board risk, you know, CEO, VPs, and I just have general conversations with them when I first come in the door. And today, let's talk about cybersecurity. Let's talk about how it relates to you. What is your mission? What is your goal? And I always continue to stress that it is our job to support the business, not impede it. And eventually, after you start getting them interested a little bit in the field, if you can start doing some quantitative analysis based around the risk associated with your organization, let's say there's no two-factor authentication in place. Okay, well, what is the risk to the organization for credential harvesting from a successful phishing attack? Well, probably pretty high. Oh, we don't even have a phishing test program or a cyber awareness program. So you can start putting numbers associated with those. And when you start putting numbers in front of them that, you know, from a range of minimal to maximum, the average cost to the organization could be $3.9 million on an annual basis because they don't have two-factor authentication in place. Well, then they start paying attention.
You sit up and listen.
And you go, okay, well, what do you mean? Well, there's a 94% chance that can happen on an annual basis or will happen on an annual basis going forward. And is that acceptable to you? And that's something that they said, you know, is it acceptable or is it not? And if they say it is, that's perfectly fine. Maybe that's not something they want to address or anything. But I've presented it, they've been educated, they've accepted the risk for the organization, or they drove what the risk mitigation level tolerance will be. And they say, no, 94% isn't good enough. 10%, let's do 10%. Okay, fine. We'll put the right mitigations in place to be able to do that. So that is where we have to all get as a community, and we have some wonderful folks out there in the civic community, CSO community that I've learned from. There's some great folks out there that I definitely would recommend. To different people, the FAIR, F-A-I-R model is tremendous. It's something I highly recommend for anybody that wants to be in a CISO role and wants to get over the hump and get away from the qualitative side. We got to get rid of the heat chart.
Yeah.
The red, yellow, the red has high, very high, medium, critical. What does that mean? Yeah. To us, what does it mean? But what does it mean to an executive?
Right. Well, and you've specifically brought in an empirical approach that resonates with, you know, dare I say, bean counters, but also makes sense from a fiscal perspective. So say, Heath, that there's a company out there looking for a CISO and they need help from somebody like you or somebody like Leo Cybersecurity. How do they go about vetting organizations like yours, and then finding the right fit?
The first thing, if anybody's going to go out and wants to hire a senior CISO, and really wants, they need to truly be on board with security, and it's not just to be able to meet some kind of compliance or audit-driven requirement, and they put a generic job description out there. I mean, job descriptions are one thing, but the interview process needs to start from the top. And the first call I would want to have is the most senior person I answer to. And if the CFO, I'm going to be completely frank with you. I want to be very polite and say, that's not an organization I want to get involved with because I'm the defensive coordinator and I'm not going to answer the offensive coordinator. Now, we can be co-coaches together and offensive and defensive coordinators answer to the CEO, but that's the level it has to be at. So if you're going out to get a senior CEO, or go out to get a CISO in general that has any experience, you're going to have to make sure security is on the right level of an organization. The path to reporting on cybersecurity is directed straight to the senior manager of the organization, which is the CEO in this case.
Indeed. What a perfect analogy to bring it home to the offensive defensive coordinator discussion. Until we identify the fact that cybersecurity is an industry unto itself, like you said, that old paradigm will be there that will just tuck it under IT. I mean, I'm a pretty vicious responder when I hear someone default to that notion. I'm quick to say, well, you're talking about a completely different industry with a different skill set. And to conflate the two as one is in my view, a tragic mistake. And so you have to have an equal seat at the table so that the resources can be allocated appropriately and that there's no sort of self-preservation that sneaks in that's at the expense of the company, its integrity, its effectiveness, and its clients.
I completely agree with you, but the reason this continues to happen is, and it's our fault in our industry over the years, is we've been the office of N-O instead of K-N-O-W.
And
we need to be the office of no. We need to understand what the business strategy of the organization is, where we're going to be in 5 years, what goals we're trying to accomplish, and how do we embed security into that, reduce the risk, but not impede the business.
Sure.
And so we can all get that impression up to senior management that we're now get it, we're finally there. Most of us understand that that is our role now, and we're here to be a teammate and not an impedance. We'll be continuing to face that challenge, but I think we're winning day by day. I see more and more movement in that direction.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, he is a CISO with Leo Cybersecurity. He's a visionary, clearly, a mentor, advisor, and definitely passionate in our industry. Heath, it's been a delight to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you all so much, and God bless.
Thank you. This is Abe Thompson with New Cyber Frontier, signing off from SecureSet here in Colorado Springs.
The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Tech Security University.
You have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.